Next, we have Bruce Wood.
Thank you. I'd like to speak for a few minutes about pecan. A problem we have in pecan is called alternate bearing. It's a major problem for our industry. It's the number one problem, really, the crop experiences, regardless of where you grow it in the world. For those who might not be aware, alternate bearing is typically on a two-year cycle, up and down, with a heavy crop of poor quality and a light crop of high quality. It's a major issue for producers, and we as horticulturists have been dealing with it for a lot of years, trying to develop management strategies and tools that help the grower to overcome it. It relates back to flowering, and in pecan, flowering is can be thought of as having at least three general phases. An early phase in early on in the year being influenced by a small protein produced in the leaves, Florigen. Second phase being an interplay with various growth regulators from young developing foliage and from maturing fruit. We have some horticultural tools that we use in that phase two process, things like mechanical fruit thinning and mechanical hedging that directly and indirectly influence this interplay between PGRs to influence gene changes that need to take place to ensure you get flowering next year. The third phase, the topic of this presentation, has to do more with what's happening in late winter, just before bud break. In this phase three, there's been circumstantial evidence for quite a number of years to suggest that it's intimately related to energy reserves in the tree. We postulate that flowering and fruiting pecan is really ultimately controlled by availability of simple carbohydrates there in just before the buds begin to swell in late winter, early spring. And their influence of these carbohydrates on the genes in the meristematic stem cells and axillary buds to finalize the process of floral development. So one of several hypotheses going to be formulated from this has to do with the fact that there should be at least one simple carbohydrate that we can monitor that would relate to to flowering, and also there'd probably be a relationship with sap flow in the spring as the sap begins to move up or flow and sap pressure builds and carbohydrates begin to move up the tree. So we looked at two different pecan varieties, one about 25-year-old trees, other about 120-year-old trees, looking at what would come out of a drill hole in the trunk of that tree beginning about 3 weeks, 2 weeks before bud break. And looking at the volume of sap that would be excreted and the composition of that sap. So we looked at this over about a 16-day period, and with HPLC analysis found lots of interesting types of simple carbohydrates in the sap, but with sucrose being the dominating carbohydrate, it, of course, being a disaccharide. When we looked at trees that were clearly on versus trees that were clearly off, and look at sap flow, carbohydrate composition, and to those carbohydrates on a molar basis, it became evident that the on trees, the ones that were going to have a good crop this coming year, had a lot of sucrose in that sap prior to bud break. And the total amount of all the simple carbohydrates was also highest in those trees that were going to be on compared to the trees that were going to be off. You know, roughly a 15 to 20-fold difference in simple carbohydrates with emphasis on sucrose. Now, that was, if you looked at them when you first tapped the trees, the level or concentration of sucrose in all the sugars were higher initially than they were 16 days later, with the concentrations declining over time. And of course, the highest levels that we were able to pick up occurred in the trees that were going to be on, you know, the early on during the process when the sap was being collected, and lowest levels, by way of comparison, were those that were off trees much later. And as illustrated here in this slide, 16 days after tapping, levels were quite low in the off trees. We looked at, and excuse me, that slide's distorted, and I've tried to correct it about six times, and it still looks that way no matter what I do. Something about PowerPoint. But this is looking at the sap exudation volume. Not only are sugar levels higher in trees that are going to be on, but there's a lot more sap being excreted as a consequence. And the trees that are going to be on, in this case, nearly 60 kilograms of nuts per tree, they had a lot more liters of sap that were excreted through those taps in the trunk than did those that were going to be off. And this, if you look at the next year, the second year, then the ones that were on become off trees, the ones that were off become on trees. And again, the on trees had much more sugar, sap excreted than the off trees. And then the third year, things flipped back the way they were originally. And again, the on trees had much higher sap low volumes. This is better illustrated perhaps in this figure, where if you're looking at sap flow volume and in-shell nut yield, you see that in years 1, 2, and 3 there, that the we merged the on and off trees together, that the more sap flow there is prior to bud break, then the greater the in-shell yield is subsequent in the growing season. You can see that's a pretty sharp curve. It's a hyperbolic curve, suggesting that it doesn't take very much of an increase in sap flow or we speculate exposure to sucrose to elicit substantial gene changes and that result in much greater flowering. A similar relationship exists in these 115 or so year old trees as well. The greater the sap flow prior to bud break, the more crop load we were seeing on those trees. So to summarize, sucrose seems to be the dominant energy form there, and it appears to represent up to 95% of the, on a molar basis, the simple carbohydrates that are available prior to bud break. And the level of sucrose and the flow rate of sap is much greater in trees that are going to be on than trees that are going to be off. Also, it appears that the meristematic tissue there that are being imbibed in probably apoplastic sucrose seems to be very sensitive to a very small change in sucrose concentration. And that's encouraging from maybe a orchard management standpoint, and we might be able to influence flowering if we can alter the sucrose levels early on for just prior to bud break in the spring. So this brings us back to the original diagram of this phase three, suggesting that sucrose is really playing a major role there in finalizing this last phase of flowering in this often varying species. It also raises questions about the role of cytokinins. Cytokinins are bound to be in that sap, and it'd be interesting to know what role cytokinins also are playing in the flowering process. So it raises a lot of questions. A few of these, how is sucrose affecting gene expression? How are cytokinins potentially affecting gene expression in floral genes? And what can we do as from a orchard management pragmatic perspective to take advantage of this information to help a grower to increase flowering and perhaps fruit set in the spring? Can we inject trees, for example, with a solution of sucrose at a high enough level to make a difference? And if so, then it certainly causes to rethink about what we might do to manage pecan trees in real-world commercial situations. and it raises possibilities about the development of new horticultural tools. So thank you for your attention, and I don't know, do we have time for a question or two?
Plenty
of time. Yep. I tasted it, and I think you can, yeah, you can taste the difference, but there's something in there besides sugars. So the taste is not as pleasant as you would like, Louise.
There's some recent unpublished data out of California that demonstrates a respiration of pistachios.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're all different species, but this is more to do with citrus as well. That demonstrates a respiration increase.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having more of these respiration events prior to freeze that are decreasing the carbohydrates, the structural carbohydrates. And that's a pretty nice correlation of the decrease in fog days with the decrease in crop load the following year.
Mm-hmm.
And the only tool we've had for increasing fruits that are flowering is the compounds, the older DNOC and the oil, and hydrogen cyanamide, all of them, their function is to stop respiration one way or another, and therefore decrease the breakdown of carbohydrates. So it supports what you're suggesting here in terms of carbohydrate status.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It's, and just before bud break, it is, you know, warm days, cool nights. It's almost like a heart beating in that tree. And you're getting sucrose, based on the people who work on the sugar maple in the Northeast, you're getting sucrose that's coming out of the storage tissues into that xylem sap. And with the diurnal changes in pressure in the tree, you're pushing sugar up toward the meristematic areas and the buds. And if you got a lot of respiration going on during a dormant season, you're going to be reducing what's available for that process, and that could affect flowering. Pete?
Yeah, Bruce, did you look at amino acids at all?
I knew you would ask that, and I'm sad to say we didn't. We intended to. We still have the samples. We just haven't gotten around to doing it, but probably should.
The only species that I've tested during the dormant season is grapevine. And the grapevine is virtually no sucrose when they bleed in the winter, in the dormant season. Once bud break occurs, then it's, of course, difficult to get bleeding sap.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think I never realized it, but pecan probably similar to sugar maple in terms of how it handles carbohydrates before bud break.
Yeah. Not quite as good as sugar maple, but I haven't seen any pecan syrup on the market. But in theory, I think you can make some. All right. Thank you very much.